Well, hello and welcome to episode 103 of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Casson Rennie, and him,
El Coot, sir. There you
Greetings,
go.
Earthling.
Yes, hello from Leeds. I'm in Leeds, of all places. Yeah, living large.
It's a roadshow.
I've been here all week and I am absolutely frazzled. Yeah. I tell you. I've been doing my NVR Advanced Practitioner course, and it's akin to being throwing down a set of emotional stairs every day and then dragged back to the top and thrown down again the next day. I shouldn't say that.
Is it that bad?
It's not bad. No,
well, I think you can, because actually it can affect you like that, kind of, these sorts of things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pretty full on, and we're doing a lot of role play, so that's quite interesting. And today I was in a role play as a same-sex doctor. So I pretended to be you. I channeled you through that.
And, your poor partner.
Yeah, funnily enough, he did start to cry, and we realised that it wasn't even part of the role play.
So this is advanced practitioner.
Advanced NBA. Practitioner, no less.
So what does that mean then? What does that mean compared to just a normal kind of?
You get a cape this time. No, you don't. What it means is this is looking really specifically at the impacts of trauma. And that's really interesting because the temptation is to believe that, I mean, we're familiar with NVR and there's a lot of noise around NVR, but actually when you get down to it, not that many people are talking about actual NVR. But anyway, it's looking at systems around families, then it's looking at adults around children, then it's looking at children. And I think what has been really fascinating is that we've spent the last couple of days, and I've got my last day tomorrow, looking at the impact of trauma on adults, really, and how that impacts on how they parent and how they interact with children and how we can support, we can bring adults out of trauma. And that has just been really fascinating because there's an element of some of this is like, this is bleeding obvious that people are freaked out because you and me people, and I'm sure I don't want to lay yourself on bare, but there's been times when both you and I have been pretty freaked out by our kids. Mm-hmm. But just really interesting looking at how the impact of trauma then impacts on how we parent and our capacity to respond to our children in a way that's appropriate and healthy. So unpicking all of that stuff. But obviously then it's a bit close to the knuckle, so I was being a bit like, oh,
yeah.
Don't pick me for a role play because you might see a man unravel.
Is that not the hard thing about doing stuff like this as well? Because obviously it's very close to. Yes, you're looking at it through a professional lens, but you're also looking at it through a completely different lens, and that must just put. Oof.
Well,
oh, yes. You'll need to lie down by the weekend.
I tell you, after the first day, I was kind of like, thought I'm not sure I'm going to survive this. That's a really good question because you've got to have your own chisel in. Stored away, haven't you? You've got to have that all. You can't be like playing it out into families' lives. So I have thought a lot about that actually, and I found it incredibly helpful to do this course. And
I can send text messages.
Oh my goodness! That's Siri was like just wondering what I was saying. So I apologize. that's the voices. That's my voice.
Back off, Siri.
Back off. Too soon. Yeah, so I think that's anything for any practitioner, though, anyone who works with families and trauma and stuff, you've got to have your stuff stored away. You've got to have it.
Yeah.
But also, I think one of you're probably the same as well, that when we get the opportunities to speak to people, what people want is that lived experience.
Yeah.
So I know when you talk about reflective parenting, you do all of those talking. See, I'm plugging you here. See what I'm doing? You see where I'm going? Is that but what
I know, I can see the segue is about 4 or 5 minutes away, but I can see it coming.
It's on the horizon. It's coming. But what people are interested in is that, and I think what people are interested in is that actually we don't want some sort of dry academic. Oh yes, this is why you feel like this. It's someone to go, hey, I'll tell you about the time when this happened, and yeah, that's my story, and yeah, we haven't got it all together. We're doing our best, and so I think that people find that incredibly. What's the word? Incredibly
real.
Yeah, real. It's
authentic.
authentic. Yeah, I'm trashed. My brain is frazzled. What's the word? Validating.
Okay.
So someone goes, you know, I am a dad and I lose my temper, and everyone go, all the dads in the room go, oh, cool, me too then, that's us. Because I don't know about, I don't know whether you get this, but I get an awful lot of women coming up to me saying, you need to talk to my husband.
Oh, I get that all the time. And my first reaction is to say, why is he gay as well? But I don't say that. I'm joking. No, but I get, yeah, you're right. I get that as well. Can you, you know, I need you to speak. And, you know, I'll be at a conference or something like that, and they'll like literally drag their husband over, kicking and screaming right by his legs, say, you need to speak to this guy. And it's really interesting as well, because there's obviously we're two males. They tend to, not that, I mean, everybody's different, but their husband will either, or their partner will either be like my husband, or they'll be like me in terms of their approach. So, do you know what I mean? Like, so if there's two of us together, they're like, okay, so, and
which one am I?
I need you, yeah, I need you to speak to, you're like me, so that's why we probably go on. But, you know, they could be very kind of, I want to say stubborn, so they'll speak to Tris, but you know, it's just like
he doesn't listen to the podcast, does he?
No, he doesn't listen. No, okay. Thankfully. So yeah, that's, I get that all the time as well. Yeah, and I mean, it's a nice thing, but it's also quite difficult sometimes as well, because you feel like you're doing the job of what a marriage counselor or something should be doing.
You need to get better at dodging those bullets, because I tend to. I think
you tend to run off in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I tend to, or faint. I just pretend to faint. That's the van that really helps. I go, oh, faint. But that was so camp, wasn't it? Oh, can I have it?
Yeah, that was. not role playing now, mate.
No, anyway, I'm not now. But okay, so for example, you've been to lots of Adoption UK conferences. You see the segues. This segue is getting closer. We're like,
isn't it? Yeah,
it's getting closer. Coming over the horizon. But what, thinking about support for men. What was the ratio of women to men at the Adoption UK conference?
I mean, it was a perfect place for a gay man to be, because it was, majority of it was female.
Or you could argue it's a perfect place for a heterosexual man.
Well, you know, depending on what you look at,
your goals and aspirations.
Generally, my friend base is majority female, as you know. And you're one of the exceptions, and there's others, but for me, it's like it is the best place,
where you feel comfortable.
But it is majority female, and even trying sometimes to get male speakers is quite difficult.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, not always, but often. And I think it just depends really on kind of what you want them to talk about, or what they can talk about. Because of course, you know, there's certain topics that men will talk about, and I'm not generalizing men or female or all this stuff before anybody starts writing to the complaints team. But you know,
who's it's a man, just, by the way, and he'll put you right.
Yeah, exactly.
Coincidentally, a man.
But sometimes it can be difficult, because there's, you know, I'm just trying to think, the last one we did, there was a good whack of males there, and you know, there was male trustees and all that sort of stuff as well, but again, it's a community that is really kind of mainly female.
Yeah, when you look on Twitter,
being able to, you know, if you've only got to look on social media and say, and look at who would say, oh, tonight this happened and I really need some help. And again, I'm not generalizing, but it is a general kind of note from me that it's generally gay men or females. It's very rare I see a heterosexual male go, tonight has been crap, or this or that, how can I help my child deal with these feelings? The number of people that do that, I could actually name from the people that I follow, obviously. I mean, you know, I don't follow everybody, and not everybody follows me, but I'm just saying that is the kind of, the community is generally made up of females who, you know, who have
this ability. I don't know how you address that really, because I think that, that in some part of that is just the personality of, or the, that, I mean, it's a stereotype, but it's a fairly, it's truth in it.
Yeah, I know. But different to this. I mean, how many males listen to the podcast?
No idea. Probably.
And that's the thing, isn't it? We don't know the demographic. But what I would guess is more than we think.
That closet podcast listeners come out of the closet. No,
but more than we think, in terms of, you know, they may not just want to say they listen to the podcast, and that's fine. But also, they may. I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, it's not necessarily something that they have to kind of do in some front of somebody or watch in front of somebody. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. And
yeah, I have no idea how we got onto this
subject. I have no idea either. I'm kind of just racking my brains to think how you did. But anyway.
Yeah, anyway. But,
We were talking about NVR.
So I've got another day tomorrow, and then I have to go in and write an essay, I think. And then actually I have to find someone to practice on, which is slightly scary. Some poor soul.
An adult is this?
No, I have to go away and do some actual work with a family.
Oh, with family, okay.
Yeah, because you can't, you've got to kind of evidence that you can, that you're functioning and capable and be able to kind of articulate and reflect on what you've done, which is kind of a key function of social work, is being able to unpick.
Taking it and making this assumption that it's not, you can't do your own family now.
Well, I think you can, but I think like any therapy, I mean, that is a really good question, because obviously I'm a social worker, and you just can't social work your own family. You just can't do it. Yeah. And actually, I've thought about this long and hard, and I've really reflected on this. I don't know whether I've said this on the podcast before, but what I realised was, over the last few years, we've had a few wobbles in our family, significant wobbles. And I have been into lots of professional meetings, and I've gone in as a social worker. And that's probably a coping strategy for me, that I've gone in like really full on, efficient, notepad, come on everyone, raise the game sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's worked to a point. It's kept me safe in my head, and it's kind of, it's got us through some tricky moments and made sure people have done their jobs. But then I realized towards the end of it that actually that people were responding, they weren't necessarily responding to me as dad. And so I had this moment where I thought, oh, right, now I need to be a dad. And so I had this kind of total unraveling in a meeting, like where I kind of confessed my feelings of fear and anguish and all this kind of stuff. And people were somewhat taken aback, which is maybe me wrong-footing them, but not intentionally wrong-footing them, but me just saying, actually, can we remember that I'm just a dad as well? And I don't, I want to kind of take off that social work hat, and I want to be a dad, because I'm a bit freaked out and I'm a bit sad. And I took that, and that was good. But anyway, I feel like we're way off the beaten track now, and we've got a list of things we want to talk about tonight. No specific topic. Well, actually, there's the barometer, isn't there? Do you want to do your barometer thing?
My barometer thing. Well, just to say, because we've been waiting a while for this to come out, haven't we?
Yes.
It was supposed to be out earlier this year, but there was a certain pandemic that screwed that over. So this is the Adoption UK barometer.
Excuses, shmooses.
I know, yeah. We have been waiting to hear from Sue Armstrong Brown, who's the CEO of Adoption UK, and she has been rather busy, I think, with the barometer and kind of changing the way that things work at Adoption UK. So we forgive her. We do forgive you, Sue. Not that you're listening, but so we're
she has organizing people to listen for her.
She probably does, yeah. But we are organizing currently a time for her to come on and talk in depth with the barometer. But we've got some highlights, and this is really interesting, because I have read the barometer,
and I have not,
and you have not, which is normally the other way around, isn't it? Normally,
I am the functioning adult, and normally you. So you're the functioning adult tonight. So I'm going to ask me some questions. Tell me some things about the barometer, please.
Right. So, how many respondents were there this year to the barometer? Bearing in mind the barometer is from 2019. It was the survey was done in 2019. It was supposed to be out earlier this year, just in case anybody's thinking. How many respondents this year?
Right. I know the answer to this because Becky Brooks told us 5,000.
Oh. Okay. But
which is more,
compared to 2018, 3,500, so there's an uplift of 1,500 respondents on that. So that is fantastic news, and I really was delighted to see that, because I was at Adoption UK when they did the first one, and we thought 3,500 was great. 5,000 is even better, so that means that someone's taken notice, people are taking notice, it's registered somewhere and it's been promoted a lot further than it was the last time. And we're getting the people who maybe, you know, don't use social media, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Because that's statistically relevant, isn't it? Because if you, I think if something like,
the more you have,
50%, 50,000 adopters, exactly, that's 10%.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it is. Excuse me. The first thing was that struck me was in the 2018 month, 79% of respondents would have recommended adopting as a way of becoming a parent.
How many 69% did you say?
79%.
Right.
Yeah.
Pay attention from now on.
Yeah. This year it's 73, so that's dropped a little bit. But again, that could be, you know, larger number of respondents, so it's kind of all relative, and that's why I'm saying we do have Sue, who's kind of, you know, coming on to talk to us about this in a bit of detail. But that has dropped, obviously it has dropped whatever way you look at it, but maybe not as much as we have.
Still not a lot, though, isn't it? It's like saying, you know, you wouldn't go to, if you went to 100 parents and said, how many of you regret being a parent?
Exactly, yeah. 79 of them, 73 of them would say yes, and the
yeah. But that's interesting. But that feeds into our next topic of conversation, doesn't it? Later on, after the Brommer, we've got the other thing to talk about.
All right, okay. Yeah, I'm just focusing on this now. You know me and my man brain. One thing at a time. One thing at a time. Now, this was interesting. Very interesting. 68% of families who became families in 2019... 68% had no written adoption support plan at the time of placement. 68%. Now, to me,
yeah,
that's high. That's very high. Right. I mean, obviously, we might get some background from Sue when she comes on as to the specific question that was asked. Obviously, I couldn't answer it because I couldn't take part this time. But my point is, a child should never be placed without a adoption support plan, at least the outline of one, which may need tweaking in the 10 weeks up till the adoption order is granted or applications going in. So I thought that was quite high. That struck me as quite a high number, given regionalisation. Yeah,
which we would hope would where the good practice would rise to the surface. Yeah,
exactly. So I thought that was quite high. What else? This was a really interesting one for me. 92% were willing to meet birth. 92% were willing to meet birth parents. Only 25% of those were able to meet the birth mother.
Right, which is,
and only 10% of 10% were able to meet the birth father. So 92% were willing, but 25% were able to.
That maybe reflects the experience of the birth parents and their, you know, their own circumstances, maybe their how they feel about it. Because it's a massive, you know.
It's huge, isn't it?
But the question is, if 92% are willing, and we know that when it does happen, everyone I've ever spoken to where it's happened, and we tried and it didn't work out for us, they said it was fantastic. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say we met them and it was the worst thing that ever happened. It's always the opposite. Exactly. So why aren't we making that happen? When I say we, I mean social workers.
We've talked about contact a lot lately, and 65% of respondents would consider direct contact in the future, which I think is a nice number. However, it's only that they would consider it. It doesn't necessarily mean that they would do it. And I think there's a
good bit point. Of a that is a really good point, isn't it? Because this is an anonymous questionnaire. So you would hope that is fairly true. It's not like you've asked people to their faces and they've gone, oh yeah, of course we consider.
Bear in mind, I could have sat and wrote all these percentages down, but I'm just kind of highlighting the ones that I think that we would probably discuss.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, so CPV, as they called it in here, which we would call CCVAB, which is challenging violent aggressive behavior. But they are still calling it child and parent violence. 64% of respondents said they'd experienced CPV, which I still think is quite high, isn't it?
It's down 1%, but so it's statistically not relevant, is it? Exactly. 1%. That is a lot. I mean, then reflect on, because I was in, I was doing the course today, and the non-violent resistance course. So the amount of professionals that are working in adoption that were present on the course, doing the course, was statistically massive. And I'm being careful what I say, because I don't want to identify anyone from anywhere and all that kind of stuff. But maybe a third of peak professionals, when we know that child to parent violence is actually an issue outside of the community of adoption. It's much bigger. It's dwarfed by what I would say. So it then reflects that the whole complexity of how people are much more, you know, adoptive parents get access to services so that, you know, the people are providing that service. Because I think increasingly you see that lots of the RAs have got people trained and training up, or it's part of their stuff, they're part of their offer. Can we say offer?
So,
but that's really interesting. I mean, that's, you know, that's, my head goes towards that, but that's interesting.
And also there's a little bit of this, and, you know, I didn't get that far in terms of, so last year they were quite clear about how many Adoption UK members had responded in relation to this barometer, because obviously that's quite a key part as well. Given that Adoption UK have a membership, and that could have been, if it was 100% of Adoption UK members, then it wouldn't have really been a kind of, what's that word?
Representative?
Yeah, that's the one. But what I thought was interesting was, because FASD was a focus topic this year, or I say this year, you know what I mean? It's released this year, isn't it? The one previously was education, and this one is FASD. And of course, we do know that there's a quite high level of challenging and violent aggressive behavior within families who have a diagnosis of FASD or even a suspicion of that. So, and of course, Adoption UK have got the FASD hub in Scotland. And I'm not saying that, you know, they were all coming from the FASD hub, but, you know, in terms of some of the respondents, it may well have been that, you know, some of the kind of experience of those have come via that as well, in terms of reaching out to people to actually respond to this as well.
But those are two issues, the NVR and the FASD, that if I look back to 2013-14, they were just not, not part of this worldscape. There was no connection, but they weren't even discussed at any sort of level. The adoption issues are around other things like attachment and, you know, the area. But clearly through things like the barometer, we're kind of focusing in and saying these are really specific issues that are really prevalent. So that's good. It's got to be a good thing.
The only really one that I would kind of say would be on what they class as disruptions. And they were very clear from the beginning again about language. You know, they've called them disruptions in this for the purposes of the report. There was 3.8% of respondents claimed a disruption. Would that be the, with 63% of those not expected to return home. So that's quite
I'm going to get my calculator out. Just keep talking.
Well, all I was going to say was, I think that, you know, that's, I'm not sure, we may have had that statistic from 2018 as well, I don't know, but I think that that's an interesting statistic in terms of those not expected to return home, in terms of permanently living back at home. So 63% is high, but it's not unexpected, I don't think.
Well, that's 180 children in disruption, and then 63% of that is 113 children not expected to. And it's out of a community of about 70,000 children. I mean, it's catastrophic for any of those families.
Of course it is. So, and there's lots of recommendations and stuff. I mean, we'll put a link on to the barometer, obviously, on this podcast. And it is interesting reading if you've got spare hour to be able to have a quick flick through it. But I'd also, and like I say, I I had to do it very quickly. but I need to have another look at it, because I'm not sure that if we looked at the kind of last barometer and whether kind of some of the recommendations had been picked up, or if the, you know,
that would be a really good conversation to have with Sue or whoever comes on to say what difference.
Yeah, but I did go to the launch event, which was online, obviously. And our lovely friend Ed Timpson was on there. We do miss Ed Timpson. But Tulip Siddiq was there as well, and she's very keen to kind of help. I think, you know, we can say what we like about MPs and what have you, but actually the MPs that were present were there because they have a real kind of interest in this, and they really want to kind of champion it in the House of Parliament. So Tulip Siddiq even offered her email address live on YouTube. So, great lady. But it was interesting. There was a lot of kind of information in there, and you know, I hate to keep on going on about Ed, but I do miss Ed. And you know, the Adoption Support Fund was discussed, and how it needs to be a permanent fixture for, you know, those that can't live with their birth families and all that sort of stuff. So it's all stuff that we know, but the thing is, I guess it's like anything else, isn't it? It's when we start to see things, you know, and you know this because you've been doing this a little bit longer than I have in terms of Up the Big House. You know, it's when you start seeing that those things go on papers to go to, you know, be discussed in the House and up the Big House and all that sort of stuff. That's when you know that it's happening. But until then, it's kind of just chatter, isn't it? You know,
and we're without a chair for the Adoption Special Guardianship Leadership Board. And I would imagine I think the plan is to know by the end of October. I think that was what I heard. That was the word on the street.
I find it very strange that COVID. Oh, of course, we can COVID.
That's the catch-all excuse for everything.
I'm sure that's delayed recruitment on it. Isn't it?
Ivan Hoovered, COVID. that sort of thing. Wash the windows, COVID.
But yeah, we hope to have Sue on hopefully mid to late October, because she's on annual leave now. But
what? When did she get Becky?
I know, she's on holiday. How dare she be on holiday when we want to talk to her?
How about her? Maybe we should get Becky on, because Becky's cracking good value for me.
Well, Becky did, she did all the kind of analysis of the thing. So she's very, you know, I'm easy with which one.
we'll let the bookings department sort that out, shall we?
Yeah.
I'll send them a memo.
It's nice to have Sue there to kind of, you know, think about the future in terms of how they're going to influence and stuff like that, because, you know, adoption
strategic sort of,
you know,
level.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
good stuff.
So yeah, but yeah, there you go. That's the barometer.
That's the barometer. So we're flying through the topics tonight, and I think that the next one on my list is, we're going to do a thing, aren't we? We've been trailing it. We've been telling people we're going to get merch. We're going to get. Please tell me we're going to get
OnlyFans, Patreon, whatever they're called. Yeah,
don't know. Honestly, my communist leanings are playing up.
We are doing a thing, aren't we? We are doing a thing. We're kind of. You explain it, because we're doing more than one thing. It's just that this is the first thing.
This is the first thing. I think we're really keen, and I like the idea that we're going to do this at a conference, but we're going to try and get as many free spaces for it, because we do have to earn a living, and you can't just invite people to come on for nothing continuously. So we're going to get some people on, and we're going to pay them some money.
Plus, they do cost, even though they're virtual, because it is a virtual conference, just to be clear. We're not doing it face-to-face yet. Yeah. That might be next year. We might do it next year. But,
That's a plan. Although we really could sell merch, please. We've got to have merch. I want a red mug that says
"Do your cash." Actually, and your lumberjack shirts.
That'd be great.
Go on.
No, I was going to say we're digressing. So on the 20th of November, we're going to have a virtual conference. We're going to run it sort of 9:15 through till mid-afternoon. We're going to have five speakers. Everyone is going to be really, really linked to adoption in the sense that they're experts, but they're also people who've lived it. And I think that's the key. That was the key theme that we wanted through it, wasn't it? That we wanted to be people who, not just... I mean, it's great to hear academics, it's great to hear, you know, professionals, but for us, yeah. It just seemed like we wanted people who've lived it. So we've got yourself, myself, we've got Clarissa Stevens, who's a birth mum. Yeah. We've got Dawn Hitch, who is an adopted young person.
Mark and Parker,
And I have to say, of all of the adoptee conversations we had, that was the one that impacted on me the most. Because she's the same age as my daughter. And it was like, literally someone opening a window into my children, my young adult children. It was fantastic. We've got Ruth Scotton. We've got
Jenny Jones.
Jenny Jones, M to the B to the E. And she's going to
talk about, reluctant as she is, she's going to do it.
We dragged her out of her hibernation cave. COVID, Shmovid, come out and play with us. She's going to talk about education because she's got a vast array of she's worked in schools.
And I think, because we've called this Journey Through Adoption, and the reason we've done that is because we've got there's something for everybody in there, and I think that's what is important to me as well, because I want this to reach anybody and everybody who's adopted or who, you know, may find it useful in that sense. And I mean, it is for parents, and that's one of the reasons why the majority of speakers are parents, but in typical Alan Scott fashion, you know, we want others to be involved in this, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we've invited Dawn to have her own session and for Clarissa to kind of touch on some of the bits and pieces that she knows about. And I just think it's just going to be, you know, well, actually the interest so far, I mean, you know, I'm not going to go into the numbers, but you know, we haven't even started selling tickets yet, and we've sold
a third of our capacity. But the key thing is that that's really important how we've done it, because I think we want to make it really affordable. So I think the price point is £15 early doors, £20 full price. And it's going to be available online afterwards, so you can, you know, if you miss a session. So that's great. Yeah. But really, we would prefer if no one could pay for it. No adoptive parents could pay for it. So we've gone out to the RAAs and we've said, hey, this is going to be a cracking resource. Would you buy some tickets and give them to your adopter? So that's where we're at now. So there's no link. And I think we'll leave a number of spaces available at the end so that all the RAAs have bought what they can, there's still places for people to get.
And I think it's really important to say that, you know, we will announce the RAAs once they've paid the bill. Because until that money's in the bank, but if anybody is interested in coming and they want to tell their RAA that maybe they're missing out, then that might be a nice idea. Now, we have contacted as many as we have been able to. I say we. I'm still wondering how I managed. Well, actually, I went into the terms of reference of each of the RAAs to get the registered manager's details. That's how I got all the email addresses. So,
that's sneaky,
but you know, whatever works. If it's in the public domain, I'm allowed it. And obviously using some, you know, contacts that we both got as well. So, you know, but they might have gotten the junk email. They may not be on social media. So, you know, if you've not heard about it from your RAA or you feel like you got a ticket, then do give them a poke and give them the details of
I mean, we want the event to be fun as well. We don't want it to we want it to kind of be of a similar tone to this, where we want it to be not dry as sticks. We're going to be running the sessions really quick. We're going to have short breaks. We're going to do participation, and the night before we're going to have drinks in the bar, aren't we? We're going to do a live
event. Virtual drinks in the bar.
Yeah, bring your own drinks, bring your own bar.
And so that will be streaming live on Facebook as well.
People will have some fun and just trying to create a buzz around it, and just really practical stuff, because I think that I sometimes get, when you know, highfalutin stuff is really good. We've got to have stuff that's based in evidence and you know, research.
And I think the one thing that I've missed this year has been in kind of with people in my community, and to be able to have a cup of coffee and stuff like that. And that's still not possible. I know it's not still not possible. But you know, we've got the option to be able to do the coffee break, where people can go off into a room into a virtual breakout room with one of the speakers that we've got, or Alan, myself, or whatever. So we're gonna, you know, it's not the same. We know it's not the same. But then for £15, £20, you know, what do you expect, loves?
What do you expect, man? Honestly,
seriously, that's not even going to cover Al Bogro.
And honestly,
it's exciting. And I'll tell you why it's exciting, because, you know, as ever with me, I'm always a bit like, ooh, yeah, okay, well, you know, maybe we should set our sights quite low. Al says sights quite high, and it's paying off. And, you know, it's one of those situations where I'm like, okay, I'm actually going to have to do some preparation for this and some physical work as well.
It's going to be great. And if we get more than 300 people attending, then we have to go to the Zoom Uber professional, which
I know.
That's really scary.
That is very scary.
It is very scary.
But cool. It's the beginning. It's one of the first things that we're doing. And, you know, we've got other things up our sleeve. And I think the only one that I would say really next year is we are going to do a practitioner event, aren't we?
I really want to do that. Do something that's going to really develop practice.
So any practitioners that are listening going, oh, I want to come November the 20th, hold your horses. There will be an opportunity for you to purchase all the resources and the sessions after it's been on for the adoptive parents, but you will also be able to attend a proper practitioner one next year.
Yeah, hopefully do that the winter, springtime. That'll be really good. I think just
like over having to do this,
because I'm increasingly frustrated, and this maybe reflects a few conversations I've had this week with adoption practitioners, which remain one of the probably, I know it's kind of contradictory because they have a lot of power. Adoption practitioners have power when we talk about the adoption triangle, circle, square thing. However, we don't hear their voices, do we? And I think criticisms I would have of the Adoption Special Guardian Leadership Board, if I dare have a criticism, is that there is no practitioner voice. Now, they would argue that they've got the head of the ADCTD, yes, you know, the head of the...
Yeah.
But we need practitioner voices, and we need to hear what they've got to say. So let's getting a chance to sit down and, you know, I do meet adoption social workers, but they're my adoption social workers, so we're not going to have that conversation. Meeting other ones at the places, finding out there's lots of people with lots of questions, sort of lots of social workers going, I'm not sure about this bit. I think we can do this better. And so really creating a place where we can do that, and that can be influenced by us who are living that experience to influence them and say, actually, we're up for this. We're up for you doing this differently. And that's really exciting to me.
Yeah. And, you know, regionalization has helped with that, because obviously, you know, adoption social workers have been able to mix with other adoption social workers and stuff like that. But we wanted to be a countrywide thing, and not just for England, not just for Scotland, not just for Northern Ireland, not just for Wales. Actually, do you know what? Even to go as far as to say the Republic of Ireland, where adoption looks very different, but actually the ideas that could be shared in terms of, you know, what's going on in adoption, because, you know, adoption is different here, but actually the results are the same in terms of trauma, the impacts of trauma, the and attachment and ACEs and all that sort of stuff. It's all relevant. So it's,
are we getting too big for our boots, Scott?
Nah, well, I don't know.
What's the worst that could happen?
I don't know. What is the worst that can happen? We could just sit there twiddling our thumbs and nobody turns up. We'd be doing it, you know.
And no one answers when we ring adoption support, no one answers. Oh, how would we tell the difference? No, I'm just joking. Too soon? Too close to the nickel?
Harsh. Maybe you should have said that after the practitioner event.
Yeah, sorry. It's not practitioners' fault.
Listen, to be fair, if any adoption social workers are listening, they're listening probably for the banner more than for any educational.
Okay, here's a test. If you're an adoption practitioner and you got this far, direct messages.
Yes. Oh,
that's exciting.
Actually, if you're anybody and you've got this far,
if you can laugh at yourself, you'll always be happy. That's that. So I think we've got a few interesting things. We're going to carry on with the Wednesday webcasts. That's going to happen.
Yes, that was the other thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, Wednesday webcasts. Yeah.
Again, but
like OMG, O to the M to the G.
Yeah, even tonight's conversation with Susan.
I know. Yeah.
Cousins.
I think the point with the Wednesday webcast was I was a bit like, yeah, all right then. Yeah, you know. Yeah, let's give it a go. Not really bothered, to be honest with you. What I find interesting is it's different formats, different kind of speed that it goes at. It's different conversation, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I love the fact that we're talking about one specific topic in a month, in a calendar month, because it tends to work Yeah. And, you know, we've just finished this. That's us finished for a couple of weeks now, because we've just said, okay, we need to do a bit more work on this. We need to plan it a bit better than we have done. And I think that's really important. But it's been fascinating. I've loved the topics. Contact and race have been, you know, contact we could talk about till the cows come home. Let's face it, you know, it could be a conversation that we could have every week now. I think the racing is something that we've only just scratched the surface on. But that's the point of them, isn't it? It's about kind of creating that conversation.
And I think people are engaging with it a different way. I think people want to ask those questions, and, you know, an hour with a guest is one thing that we do for the podcast, but doing this really short kind of like, and the opportunity for people to fit in, like comment in live, and sometimes people don't, sometimes they do, but, you know, it's...
It depends, doesn't it? Just depends on the topic. I think the contact one was really quite interesting, because that raised a lot of questions from people live. And if you look at the race one, it hasn't. And I think that's indicative of how people feel about asking questions about race. I really, really do believe that. Because, you know, I was wary about doing the race discussions, because I was scared to use the wrong words, or they're used the wrong terminology in terms of how I address somebody in terms of their ethnicity and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's the general population, in terms of the adoption population I'm talking about, not the general population.
Well, I mean, I think we are all really conscious we want to get it right. And exactly. And also that we really don't want to get it wrong. So it does reflect. I think it's probably been the hardest thing I've done. I've had a knot in my stomach every Wednesday morning, if I'm honest with you. Thinking, how is this going to go tonight? Because it's live, you know. So you think, am I going to lose my registration tonight?
Mess all up. Is this a downfall of the, you know? But we're going to take a couple of weeks off, and we'll probably come back with that at the end of October, won't we? Just to plan it, really, and just have some topics.
Just breathe, you know. Next week we're talking to the people from Pause. You know Pause?
Pause.
The people who work directly with their birth families and support them to not have more children. Now
this will be interesting.
It's
a podcast, not a webcast.
It's a podcast, because I think and I had to have a very serious grown-up conversation with them before they would even agree to come on.
Why?
Just because?
Oh, okay. You might want to share that with me later, then.
Because it's not without controversy. It's not. It's considered to be maybe part of like the neoliberal kind of arm of social work, where it's seen as potentially draconian. That's maybe, you know, that.
Right. Okay.
So I think there's issues around people's liberty and people's the ethics and values of it are in question. About, you know, access to services on it's conditional. So I said, can I ask all those questions? And they went, yeah, of course you can. So they were very generous. I was sweating buckets before that conversation. I thought they were going to come lawyered up. So that's going to next week. I'm going to put the opportunity out for people to put comments and questions, because that.
I think that's, I think we do need questions as well. So
yes, I'll do that over the weekend. The last thing, right, let's go for it. This is where we burn out. We've done 40 minutes and we've not even had a subject this week. So thank you if you've got to this far. Then your dog will
definitely DM us.
You know, this is.
Let's know how many minutes you managed to listen to before you actually gave up on life generally.
Lost the will to live at this point. You can adopt. That story is. It's the gift that keeps on giving from controversy, isn't it? Point of view.
Oh, yeah. It is. It just keeps on coming.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, because I've really thought about this. I thought I've yet to speak to any one person who is not involved in the campaign, right? Like personally talk to them. I've seen stuff online from people coming, oh, this is great, right, or whatever. But every individual I've had a conversation with, they've gone, and scratched their beard, or if they've know, struck the chin and gone,
oh, woman, don't point them out.
Oh, craggy. Everyone's gone, oh, I'm not sure, I've got questions. And I think that's the thing that I'm taking away from this, is that it's raised more questions than I think any other campaign that I've ever seen, and not necessarily in a positive way.
I mean, I think let's just be open and honest about that. The campaign launched last week, the week before.
Yeah.
And you and I and a number of others have become involved in the in a kind of almost like a little working group working alongside the campaigning I don't know how to describe it. It's quite confusing, actually, because there's so many different aims and objectives to the whole campaign, and there's
it's
different
a long-term
kind of
strategy, isn't it?
Yeah, there is, and it's not just this campaign, and you know it's going to go on for a while. And I think that I've been very open and honest. I've mentioned it once on Twitter, and I've mentioned it once on Facebook, and I'm not going to mention it again until the message is a little bit kind of more. What's the word I'm looking for here now? Well, I don't want to use words clear and concise. What I want to say is I just think it needs to reflect the kind of message of adoption as is. Yeah. You know, that's my thing at the minute. You know, the language is not great. I love the premise around it. And, you know, families are like that, whether they're adoptive, whether they're birth, whether they're foster carers, whether they're SGOs, you know, the pictures and the films that you see, that is how life is generally for most people. But it's not always the case. And I just still retain my thing that it was not exactly balanced enough to be the one thing that you would see and go, yes, I want to adopt.
Well, I was talking to someone today, and I'm being really careful what I'm saying, so because I don't
we
want
have
anyone to be adopted.
We have to be careful.
Yeah, no. I was talking to someone today
at
about
the end of the day, we would still say yes, adopt. Yeah, yeah? I would still say yes, adopt. It's the best, and it is the best thing I have ever done. But I'd put caveats on it.
Yeah, and those caveats need to be front and center, don't they? And what someone was saying to me in relation to assessment process at the moment is saying that they've got real concerns in relation to that we're not going into people's houses. We're not you know you can go into someone's house and you can pick up a vibe, can't you? You know, and that's maybe that's not a particularly social worky, you know, you can't put that in your form. Funny vibe in the house, lovely people, everything, ticked every box, but that vibe. But actually there is some interesting social work research about going, well, as a social worker, you've got to go, what is this vibe?
Yeah.
What is the thing that...
Get put deeper into that, haven't you?
Yeah. And, well, you'll know, we've all met people where we felt unease, or we felt, or not maybe unease, we felt like immediately, oh yeah, I think this person's safe, or this person's not safe, or I wouldn't necessarily send them to the shops for a bag of crisps for me. And it's about a social worker, good social work practice is about being able to kind of unpick that and go, well, what is that? Is that, what, you know, how do you get to the bottom of that? So that's really, that can be really complicated. And also in relation to disguise compliance. And what we've seen, and this is a very, very bad comparison, have you seen in the news recently about a lot of people have got puppies over lockdown and now there are too many dogs?
Oh, I used this example today in that meeting today.
All right. So, yeah. So, I know it's a terrible, terrible example.
It's the one that people would understand, let's face it.
Yeah, so now we've got all this time in our hands, we can do an assessment to adopt, because we've always wanted to do it, but now actually we can do it on Zoom. Mm-hmm. So we'll do it. But actually, if the message is solely on whether you can or can't, then that's missing some really big questions about whether you should.
Yeah, it definitely is.
There's lots of questions. Then that practitioner unease, I'm finding really quite... I want to go, why isn't this voice being heard? Because I'm seeing managers going, yep, cracking on. But then if you dig beneath that, what are your social workers who are actually doing it? What are they saying? Because that's the voices we need to hear. We need to have, you know, I'm not talking about necessarily a union, but a consensus of what are the assessment social workers saying? What are the adoption support social workers saying? Yeah. What are the contact workers saying?
I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, the bus, back of the bus ads, the flagpole, you know, the flag kind of things on poles and stuff saying, oh, you know, little Johnny just wants to be read a bedtime story and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's actually quite a triggering thing for all of us, because actually that may have been 15 years ago how I was recruited to become a parent, if that makes sense. I say it's like signing up for the army. Well, you know, there's some comparisons, I guess.
Let's stretch that metaphor too thin.
And it's a tough audience, let's face it. You know, recruiting for something as important in a child's life. And, you know, whether you agree with adoption or not, it's here. And, you know, yes, it needs a little bit, a lot of overhaul. Who knows? You know, we'll never get to the end of that, to the bottom of that.
Yeah.
I don't think in our lifetime. But all we can do is make it the best for what it is for the children that receive it. And, you know, the last couple of years for me, I've kind of had my eyes open to all this kind of stuff, you know, in a big way. You know, if you'd said to me 5-6 years ago, we're doing this campaign, I'd have gone along and I'd have been one of those families on the film, you know. I would have done, because I was totally immersed in this positivity of adoption. But actually, you know, having adult children, and I'm sure you must be the same, I love them all to bits, I really do, but mm-hmm. God blimey, when they become that age, it gets harder. And the messages about this lifelong support, you know, Anita, one of our colleagues, brought it up yesterday, and she brought it up again today. You know, you cannot say lifelong support, because lifelong is lifelong, you know. And if
be careful
you,
what you promise.
Yeah, if you drop that mantle at the age of 18, you can't then pick it back up again, you know. It's a really kind of problematic thing. And also the myths. We're always going to have myths around adoption, you know. We're 15, 16 years into gay people being able to adopt, and we're still letting gay people know that they can adopt. We're still letting people know who don't own their own houses or their own homes that they can adopt. If they're single, they can adopt. You know, this is going to go on and on and on and on. And the myths around adoption seems to be one of the main focuses of it. And I just think that you could be there forevermore trying to dispel the myths of adoption. And it's not really the front for a campaign like this.
That's really interesting. I never thought of it like that. But you said something as well that made me reflect. You know, you said how this fairy tale doesn't occur, but I think that the thing for me is that I'm not sure that all aspects of adoption serve adopted children or children
no.
adopted.
It doesn't.
I don't think it serves them.
No.
And that's what we ultimately come down to: is it children for children for families or families for children? And that that feels like an unresolvable question.
Yeah, it does.
But
this whole thing seems unresolvable in my head, because we've been talking about it, you know, and like I say, you've been going up the big house longer than I have, but I've been going up there for 6 years, and this is the thing that comes up again and again and again. You know, we're not recruiting enough people. Let's do regionalization. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's do the next thing. But it's not solving it, and it seems unresolvable in terms of a consistent thing in terms of recruitment. So what does that tell us about it?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? You know, is the reason that adoption is dwindling, is it because people don't think they can adopt? Or is there another, is there something else going on? And I don't see anyone asking that question in the big house, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
And that's the question we're consistently, we don't get anything for recruitment.
Well, we're asking it, but it's not getting any farther than the kind of, the
committees.
The chief committee person that we're asking it to do. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Why is it falling? What, you know, is it because people don't know they can adopt? No, it's not. I don't genuinely think there's something else, that people have reservations. And I think we've always reflected this. You can see an ad campaign like "You Can Adopt," but you don't have to follow the hashtag very far to see that there's another story going on. Because there'll be plenty of people like you come make one comment, or, you know, there's, and that's fair enough. You've got to be able to defend adoption if you are that sold on it. And I do, like you, I think that it offers something unique, but I think that it can be better at that. It needs to be better at that. And that involves participation at all levels.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's my manifesto.
Yeah.
That's my manifesto.
And when all I right, become king,
yeah. Come the revolution. No. I think that we've done an hour on bits and bobs. That was like a loose ends podcast, wasn't it? That was where we...
It was, wasn't it? Yes. It does feel like that's what it's become as well, because, you know, whilst you've been busy doing your NBR stuff, I've obviously been doing the conference stuff, you know, kind of just doing all that. But actually, it's, I think now we've come out of whatever it was that was going on with the full lockdowns and stuff like that. We're starting to kind of see clearer into the brighter blue skies as we come into winter.
Green pastures.
Life can return to some form of normality, some form. I'm not going to say anymore, actually. Anyway. Some form, there you go. Some form of normality, the new normal, whatever it may be.
Yes.
And we have to embrace what we've got and be able to do it how we do it.
You speak words of wisdom and truth, as always.
I know.
Well, I'm going to shoot off because I'm in a hotel in the middle of
Leeds. I think you need to open the windows.
Why?
Just saying.
All right, I have no idea what that even means. silly boy. I've got my last day of NVR, then I'm cracking back up to north, and then, all good, all good. So you have a cracking week.
And you. It's been lovely chatting, just generally.
As always, the pleasure was all yours.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.